are gonna fucking crucify me.
Platoon is for babies.
We're going.
Oh, great.
Lorraine's gonna get crucified,
great.
Apparently. Hello.
Persona 3 all over again.
That's right.
Damn it.
Up on the top of that tower.
No thanks.
Hello and welcome to the Cubicorn Games podcast, where we nail small women to posts,
I guess. You didn't.
Come now. My name is Dustin Morbido. We're not going to crucify anyone.
That's what
look,
you
2017
say.
Has been fucked up enough as it is without
that's what I'm saying.
Literal
y'all
crucifixions.
Y'all are just literally.
Gotta burn the heretics.
Get off the cross. We need the wood. that was a common phrase around my household for someone being a martyr. Like, they're nailing themselves up on the cross and just like, get down. Don't worry about it.
Joining
we
me as the
you.
Martyr, I guess. Lorraine Morbido
playing the role
is here.
Of martyr this evening. Hello.
How's it going?
I'm good. I'm under a blanket.
I mean, things would be worse, right?
It's comfy.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And joining us via the internet, Kyle McGrath is here.
Dance like you're made of gold.
All right, ooh, I'm
always
into it.
Cheater chat.
And finally, Philip McGrath is here.
That. Phil, silent.
I'm here.
Sorry. I stopped on your response to Kyle there a little bit, but Phil is definitely
here. I
heard
two things at once, and one of them, I guess, was you introducing me.
Yeah.
So, hello, I'm here.
My apologies. Phil also may or may not be cooking. Think people have to eat. It's a whole thing.
I might be.
Prepping his food buffs for the raid.
That's right.
There you go. You're treating Destiny like it's Monster Hunter, where you have to, like... Or I guess Breath of the Wild, but...
I was thinking Breath of the Wild. I'm doing the dance right now.
Listen to those
sick tunes.
Oh no,
my food is spoiled.
No.
My all mushroom casserole is complete. Delicious.
Give me that kebab. Only kebabs.
Only kebabs. Only video games. At least only video game food.
Sure. What?
That's the most delicious kind of food.
Video game food?
Because it makes the numbers go up.
Okay.
All I ever wanted...
Basically, yeah, like, when the number goes higher, it makes me happy.
That is video games to me, especially Destiny.
I was trying to describe what type of game I want to play to Wade while he was looking at indie games, and it could basically have been summed up as, I want to explore stuff, but mostly I want my numbers to go up.
And he puts that into the algorithm, and it'll churn out, like, 20 games that maybe fit that.
He tried.
Aww.
There was too much exploration and not enough numbers.
Ah, there's your problem.
Yeah.
Rip.
I mean, there's such a fucking overwhelming flood of stuff on Steam that, mm-hmm. like, man, there are so many games.
Yeah.
Whatever I want, it's out there.
Oh, we need to talk about that story Jillian brought to our attention earlier today, because Phil will get a kick out of it.
Okay.
The Roller Coaster Tycoon thing.
Oh.
Hell yeah. I'm already interested.
So, I think this just popped up on her Facebook feed or something, but somebody made a roller coaster in Roller Coaster Tycoon that would take, like, hundreds of days to finish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I saw that.
I did.
Because it'll slow down forever, basically.
Yes.
But never stop.
I say it's basically like a fun math problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
<It's just> I guess
approaches zero without ever reaching it. Apparently,
basically a spiral. And
yeah,
let's test how far away I am from high school math. That's called an asymptote, right?
That sounds right. I'm gonna say that yes.
Google.
That's right.
Sure. And then she, because I don't think there was a video for the one roller coaster, but there was. It was called, like, the Wheel of Life and Death or something like that.
Yeah.
I was right.
Oh, cool. I like it.
Yeah, I was about to say, a line that continually approaches a given curve uh-huh. but does not
yeah,
need
but
it.
Doesn't...
Right.
Well, that's a limit.
There.
But the Wheel of Life, or the Circle or something of Life and Death, it was one of those little, like, mouse car coasters, so it's got, like, the mm-hmm. really tight turns, and it's just, like... I don't know how they got, like, a just complete square in space. Like, there's no continuing land. It's literally just a blank square of terrain, an entry gate, and then just these crisscrossing tracks.
I'm going to have to look this up. I can't picture it.
Oh, my God. It is... the video is maybe, like, 2 minutes long, It doesn't show the whole thing, but it just shows the track in its entirety. And there's,
because it would take hours.
Oh yes, it takes hours. Like the people will literally starve on this roller coaster.
I was going to say
roller coaster starvation.
People's happiness rating drops the longer they're on a coaster past a certain point, and then also they can start to drop also for being thirsty or hungry or needing to use the restroom. So.
And my favorite part was I don't remember the language entirely because she was just playing it off her phone, but it was like just some, it was a church song that I recognized playing in the background, which just made it even better. Like, this video was perfect, and my parents, like, we were over at my parents' house tonight, and they were looking at me like I was fucking insane, because I'm just, I'm dying watching this video. Because it was just Jillian and I watching it, but it was really good. I liked it a lot. I'm trying to look it up right now.
It made me actually wonder how those games are built, the older ones specifically. Like, I wonder if the way they allocate resources and the way that they use the system memory.
The Wheel of Life and Death is the name of the video.
Sure. Okay. I wonder if you can
search that in Roller Coaster Tycoon, it should be the first one that comes up, the one that we actually watched.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can make roller coasters in Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 or 2 that would not have run functionally on, like, a system of the age that would work now on, like, a modern Windows PC with, like, 16 gigs of RAM and, like, whatnot.
Oh, you mean something that would crash, like, a Windows, like, 90 computer?
Yeah. Because all the levels are finitely spaced, right? Like, the map, at least, is a finite amount of area.
Up and down and, like,
there's a maximum number of things that can be within a map, and as you approach the maximum, the map will slow down. So, basically, the more things you have, the game gets slower and slower, but it won't actually crash at any point for the most part.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I never did run into any, when I revisited those, even playing them on, you know, a modern operating system that, like, Windows is usually pretty functional in terms of backwards compatibility stuff, but other than, like, some of them, like Roller Coaster Tycoon 1, I think, not displaying at resolutions I would have liked it to, like, I never ran into, like, anything that looked like the game was not functioning correctly, which was sort of impressive, both from, like, the modern Windows side and those old games side. Like, it was neat to just see them basically just work.
Yeah.
I had to download a patch to get it to work, but outside of that, it was fine. And the last time I played it was on, I think, Windows 7, and I had to download multiple different things to be able to just run it straight off disk, but I did eventually get it to work.
I like it.
It's pretty good.
I was going to say, some people intentionally run it on older systems so that the time moves slower so that you can accomplish more within a given
time. I like it.
Within the game.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hardcore.
All those Roller Coaster Tycoon speedruns, they got to be running on, you know, 1990s computers.
Yep.
That's right, exactly.
Right, original, exactly.
Gateway, Windows 2000, PC.
12-inch CRT monitors and all.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
My last stupid factoid will be that the person who developed it, the lead designer, researched actual roller coasters and talked to roller coaster engineers to make it as realistic as possible. So the types of problems you'll have from your roller coasters can be solved by just engineering them more intelligently. And if you get, like, a problem in-game and you asked him what it was, or if you just asked a roller coaster engineer what it was, they would be able to answer it for you and tell you how to solve it.
That's awesome.
That is really cool. I mean, those games are freaking, like,
hardcore.
Yeah, I feel like they get...
You tried to take an 80-degree turn at 100 miles an hour. I didn't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out that might not be so hot.
But even more nuanced things, like your brakes are failing because of the way that you have the train entering into the station. Yeah.
That stuff's really neat.
Roller Coaster Tycoon's so good.
I really respect it.
Yeah, those games, I think, actually haven't gotten... in my mind, they've always been, like, I've always remembered them super fondly because we played a lot of them back in the day.
Same.
One and two specifically, but I feel like they don't get... They haven't gotten the reverence that they maybe deserve, like, for how cool they were at the time, just because they spawned that, like, the tycoon genre of, like, a torrent of hundreds of shitty knockoffs that were, like... That, like, those original games are still, to this day, pretty awesome, but... the things
you had to
that
be a
they've got
kind of person to get into the sim type games.
Yeah, they're
definitely
sort of like
wasn't
the
mainstream.
Yeah, they're like the Wii minigame collections of their era. Like Wii Sports to this day is still pretty cool, but you know, it begat 10,000 other dog shit ever. Piles of crap that no one will remember or no one should remember.
Party time.
Yep.
Oh, Wii Party.
Wii Party, indeed. Well, that game came with a controller, so it was almost free.
Right.
Basically.
So it had that going for it.
I feel like that was the only reason we actually bought it. Aside from, I mean, we were
pretty
young. I
think that's why we got it, too.
But yeah.
You could play the game. You could play the game that it was literally hide and seek. One of the games in that game was take all your Wii remotes and hide them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, like, someone else, like, it was like everybody but one person leave the room, and then you were supposed to hide all the Wii remotes, and then people would come back in, and they were supposed to find them, and I think, like, at some point
they
would
like
vibrate
animal
or
sounds
chirp
or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of this.
I mean, I think we only played it once.
Are you saying that we need to have a Wii Party stream?
No.
A Wii Party Party?
I would do it.
Awesome. I like it.
I would have a bad old party game stream.
Excellent. We'll save that for another time. Put that in our bonnet.
We tested it with like Ribbit King and
Pokemon
Radium, and
that's true.
That was a stream.
Yep.
Always remember, never forget.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think that's lost to the annals of the internet. Because that was
I think that was right at the Twitch crossover where they stopped archiving shit forever.
Right.
And that might not actually exist anymore, but yeah, you know, these things happen. I don't think, not that it's really a minigame collection, I guess it sort of is, but I don't think I ever owned a copy of Wii Music. So I don't think I have
think
that
anyone did.
Particular train wreck.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
In case we ever wanted to remember what that game was about.
My parents have
it. I never knew.
Oh, there you go.
We
so we have access
we have
to
a
copy of Wii
to
Music.
It. Of it, yeah. I meant to say we have access to it, and we have a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we
do
said
have
we
a,
have a copy to it.
We do
which,
have a...
makes sense.
A balance board, so you can play the
fuck
drum
yeah,
mini game
do.
With its full, like, you can tap your foot on the balance board to use the kick pedal on the virtual drum kit. I remember that about that game.
I don't think that was good.
Something.
It was bad, like the rest of that game. That game's real bad, let me tell you.
I think I would prefer to go back and play Electroplankton instead.
Electroplankton's a hell of a thing. It's real.
I never played it.
Weird.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like that game should just be like projected 24 hours a day on a wall in like MoMA somewhere. Like I feel like it's more of an art installation than it is a video game.
Sure
which is.
Is,
you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
And that
but...
Brawl level was a nightmare.
Yeah, the worst Brawl level based on the best DS game.
Because wasn't that like a Club Nintendo game or something like that. There was something
I think you
weird
did either,
about it.
You either had to
something
buy it
weird.
Directly from Nintendo originally.
That's what it
or,
was.
Yeah.
It was on their like service website or something like that. Like
yeah.
You couldn't find it in stores.
Because it wasn't like the Game Watch collections where you just redeemed a bunch of points and then they sent you a DS game or a DS game.
I knew there
whatever,
was something weird about it.
Yeah, I'm pretty
it was
sure
somewhere different.
At least originally, if not exclusively, you had to buy it from Nintendo.
The first like 2 years it was out, it only existed in Japan.
Yeah, that also I'm sure is correct.
It's not America for a while.
That sounds right. Another game similar to that is Pokemon Box Ruby and Sapphire for the GameCube that you could only buy in English off of the Pokemon Center website, and I have a copy of that, and it's apparently...
You actually have one?
Yes.
No kidding.
I've got it, and I've got the little blue and red memory card that came with it that you could, it's like the smallest one that came with, like, Animal Crossing. It's, like, the same size, but it's the perfect amount of space
like
to hold
blocks worth
the
of?
Game. No, yeah, it came with the game, and you could just put it on there.
Uh-huh. All this time, you could have been supplying us with legitimate Wish Blissies, and
I'm
we didn't
sorry.
Know.
Holy shit, that's where that came from?
I think so.
You could get, I think it was based on the number of Pokemon that were stored in there, if I remember correctly.
It, like, unlocked things?
Yeah.
Huh.
You could get shit from it. Well, no, there was a WiiWare game, like Pokemon Ranch or something like that you could actually get Mews out of if you put enough dudes into, but
wow.
I never
owned
it. I
think you had to complete the decks on the Wii game.
It was that, or just have enough guys in it, and for Gen 4, that wouldn't be that hard.
That's pretty funny.
It's just under 500 different Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Is there a path to legitimacy? Could you take a Pokemon from there all the way to modern Pokemon?
Yes, Gen 4, absolutely.
Okay.
3, even.
Yeah, you can get anything from Gen 3 up now.
Because three was the split between the, like, the only ones that are fully cut off, like, legitimately, without any kind of, like, weird hacking or something that you could do, are the Game Boy Color ones.
So even, like, also, Fire Red and Leaf Green?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
And Dustin, so you're aware, the thing, the weird reference Kyle just made, Wish Blissey was, like, an incredibly top-tier super thing, only available through this really impossible-to-get source.
Sure.
So if you were for some reason to play 1v1 competitively, you would either use a hacked Wish Blissey or not have one, or be one of like 1,000 people in the world that had a legit
had one. A legit one.
Yeah.
So you're saying I should make Wish Blissies?
No. Yes.
No.
I mean, he's saying you could make Wish Blissies. Because that game, so the Pokemon box thing, there's no game in there whatsoever, right? It's
not
just
really.
It's really just like a weird file utility
for be in
Pokemon on the GameCube.
Are the GameCube games in this room?
Careful with your headphones.
I know. But careful with everything. I'm attached to like five
they're in
wires
that closet.
Right now.
Lorraine's doing it live, trying to see if she can dig that out of
the
vault.
It's literally just
there it is.
Software where you move things around. There's nothing
else. Oh, it's like stuck to Coliseum for some reason. There we go.
Hey, she found it.
Da-da-da-da! 59 memory cards is what it takes. Or memory blocks in a memory card.
Look
at that shit.
Oh, yeah, the memory card's even in there.
Damn straight, because I put it, kept it in there.
It's pretty good.
Oh, you can put a little sticker on it.
Neat.
Got the whole fucking manual and stuff.
I think the only weird cool GameCube games I have are all those versions of the discs that had Zelda on them from, like, pre-ordering shit or whatever, like the Master Quest one and
I've
the other
one. Got that one.
I've pretty got the neat. Pre-order that you can get Jirachi off of for Coliseum.
Yeah, we have that somewhere, too.
Yeah, we have that. I definitely farmed Jirachis. You had to... It took, like, 15 minutes to farm one.
Because it was one per game, wasn't it?
Yeah, you had to start a new file to be able to...
Get to the point where you could, you know, do trading or whatever it required and then do it again.
In order to get access to Mystery Gift, you had to get out of the first town.
And oh, yeah, yeah. Because it was a Mystery Gift thing.
I think. Yeah. Definitely used to do that.
Oh, you could actually... Let me see something.
That manual is enormous for a thing that's just, like, move your Pokemon around. Like, it's just a full multi-page,
you can actually play
full-color
Ruby and Sapphire on your TV through this.
Oh, so it's like the world's weirdest Game Boy player?
But you have to have a Game Boy Advance connected to it. So it's not like the Game Boy player.
Huh. So it transmitted the game, like, visuals through that Game Link cable?
I think so.
Oh, weird. That's... I mean, that makes as much sense as anything else. It's not that much data, but...
I'm also pretty sure you could do any of the Game Boy Advance games. So, like, Emerald and Fire Red and Leaf Green would also work through this. I think, but I'm not 100% sure.
Funny. That's wild.
But yeah, I've got this... probably extremely rare piece of hardware, as well as a Pokemon Mini, which are also pretty rare.
Neat.
Because I'm a crazy psychopath, but that's different.
Those are the things that are like...
I could go upstairs
like
and get it.
Super tiny Game Boys that accepted cartridges, right?
Yep.
They're like almost Tamagotchi size, a little bigger, but then they had cartridges that played their own weird games.
Yes. If you ever played Pokemon Channel, there is a completely emulated Pokemon Mini in that game, and you can get all the games for it. Which is probably the neatest part of that entire game.
Was that a Wii game?
No, that is a GameCube game.
Pokemon Channel is a GameCube game. Okay. What is that part? No, it's fine, Lorraine.
I'm getting it.
I believe you.
I'm getting it. Because all the Pokemon games are right on top.
Is there a Meowth playing the guitar involved in that game in some capacity?
Yes.
Huh.
1,000%. It's got the Space World trailer basically revamped for this game.
I don't remember this at all.
Oh my god. Pokemon Channel's great. It's real bad, but it's great.
Oh, it includes 3 e-meter cards. I wonder if those are still in here.
Oh, I have them somewhere else. They're not in there.
Squirtle's got glasses.
Hell yeah, he does. He runs the shopping channel. Pokemon Channel's great. We should stream this
sometime. Pokemon Heroes the movie is on DVD and video January 20th.
Fuck yeah.
Mark your calendars, kids.
Oh boy.
What a thing.
I do have an update on the thing I said earlier. You could not get Wish Blissey from Pokemon Box. You got Wish Blissey from an event distribution at the Pokemon Center.
Okay. Because that made it even rarer.
Yeah.
Because there were only like 5 that were actually good that were given out.
So a legit one was for Japanese residents or insane tourists only.
really lucky people.
Right.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny. Crazy.
And for every legit one, there were hundreds or thousands of illegitimate ones.
Of course.
So, Box, you could get a Zigzagoon with extreme speed, a Pichu with surf, and a couple other not as interesting things.
I know I've got some of those Zigzagoons somewhere.
Maybe.
They were real easy to get. They were like the easiest thing. Because you could get the rewards per game, I believe. And it had to do with number of Pokemon stored in there, if I remember correctly. Oh, Pokemon Channel. It's like, hey, you Pikachu, but no microphone, and you watch TV.
Cool.
There you go, Pokemon Mini.
We really were at peak crappy video game or Pokemon video games for a while.
A little bit.
Yeah.
We scaled back some.
Right.
Hey, the Hey You Pikachu N64 is one of the best purchases our family ever made.
Yeah, because it was $20.
Yeah.
The game itself, I don't think we ever played. It might not have come with it, even.
That's I don't think it probably did it. It actually did come with it. That's funny.
So, because I seem to remember us having the stupid peripherals.
I never remember
peripheral.
But definitely never booted it up.
That's unfortunate.
Straight in the garbage.
That game is beautiful.
Uh-huh.
It's just a disaster, and I love it.
Oh, there's like a faint, like there's like a Mario Paint mode in here.
Yeah, just like it's great.
Color in, it's like watercolors where you just color in these.
Yeah, you take like screenshots of your TV.
Oh God.
Huh. Yeah, that game's real weird. We should play it sometime.
What a thing. Bunch of weird stuff. Cool.
It's real good. I've got some weird shit, man. Let me tell you.
That certainly is something. An ad for the Pokemon Center New York before they just changed it to the Nintendo store.
I wanted to go so bad. I never got to go.
I mean, you've been to the Nintendo store now. It's not very
different. I've seen pictures of the Pokemon Center, and it was so cool. There was a giant like Charizard statue right when you walked in the door. Oh, it was so cool. I wish I could have gone. Hey. My dad went. He was in New York.
My dad went.
He did. And then he brought back like a pack of Pokemon cards for me, but I have the bag that they came in because he gave them to me in that. And it's got like, it says Pokemon Center New York. It's got a Pichu on it. It's real small.
Neat.
Anyway, my
That's
Pokemon obsession upside. Lorraine's Pokemon hour ends now.
You are wearing Pokemon socks.
I am. They got Jigglypuff on them. That was.
Where did those come from? Did you buy those or did somebody get them
for you? No, Diana got them for me for like, it was like Christmas or my birthday or something like that. She got me a pack of Pokemon socks. One pair is, like, actually a Pokeball. Like, the top half is red. There's the little thing, and then it's white on the bottom.
Hmm. Neat.
They're fun.
Keep your feet safe from Team Rocket.
Basically. That's right. I do have Meowth socks.
Oh, indeed. There you go. Use Payday and find a quarter between your toes.
Delightful.
Anyway, Lorraine, have you been up to anything that you want to get into before we just go straight up the deep end and talk about shooting aliens in the face for a little bit?
Well, I did want to say I got and beat Undertale on my Vita.
Woo!
I did the true pacifist run. That was a lot of fun.
You had done that already, though, right?
No, I haven't actually played Undertale.
Or
she watched other people on the internet play it.
I have experienced it.
Yeah, and then she watched
me
play.
You said you had watched the
all of it. Yeah, I have watched all the runs before, so I knew what was happening.
It's not the same when you're going at it fresh.
Sure, sure. But I had just, like, I had stumbled upon it. Like, I wanted something on while I was working on, like, game art. So I just turned on, like, this one channel I followed's playthrough of it, and then I just kind of knew at that point and just watched other ones and then watched Dustin play it and then Brian Taylor play it as well. So I kind of got ruined on it inadvertently, but I still had a lot of fun playing it.
It's a cool game.
Yeah.
It is still a cool game.
Yes, 1,000%. And they added, there were, because obviously it doesn't take up, like, it doesn't get wider to fit the screen. So they made, I think the one artist, Temi, made these borders for it. And you could get, like, just standard ones, like, oh, like, whatever. But they had one that was, like, dynamic and would change by the area. So those were really neat. They were super detailed and really pretty to look at. But my favorite part was that I did platinum the game, it was very easy. But you could do that on any kind of run. Like, they don't give away anything at all. They're just very, like, you're just getting to different areas or, like, picking up items or there's a new thing that they added called the Dog Shrine which is just stupid fun, and involves you depositing money constantly, like, one at a time, so it takes a while.
Sounds fun.
But it's really silly and stupid, like, the rest of that game. But I thought that was really neat, how the trophies have nothing to do with any of the different playthroughs. Like, you could 1,000% get all of them on any one of the different runs, which I think was smart.
I mean, it's kind of the core of that game,
yes.
Right? Assuming that, like, and you know, its popularity might betray that anyway, so it might be a moot point, but assuming someone did happen to download that sight unseen, you know, from PlayStation Network Store and then play it, you wouldn't want the trophy data to be like, oh, yeah. Here's the explanation of what this game's about.
They might all also be hidden, too, like, so you can't actually see them in the game while you're doing it. But knowing what was going on, I, of course, looked them up beforehand because I wanted to platinum.
Indeed.
But yeah. And then I'm waiting a few more weeks for Gold and Silver to come out.
Hell yeah.
And I'm still looking forward to Metroid 2.
Yeah,
sure.
That's in like 9 days.
Yeah. Right.
That's another thing. It still makes almost no sense, but I still get like the convenience factor is such a big part of it that like there are one or two, there are between two and three Super Nintendo games that I have thought about booting up over the past like 2 weeks that I'm like, well, I'll just wait until this next SNES Classic comes out.
I know.
For kind of no reason. Like, I could just play them.
Right. I'm really looking forward to Star Fox 2 as well. I can't wait. I'm excited.
If I was going to just play them, it would defeat the purpose of buying the thing.
Exactly.
Right. If I'm going to throw down my $80, I might as well get my use out of it. God damn it. But yeah, I found myself, I was like, I don't really, like, I guess, like, I'm just tricking myself in some way, but it was just like, it was
absolutely.
I was like, I just don't know why I'm doing this, but it'll be so much sweeter when I walk out of GameStop with that thing, and God willing, don't get mugged on my way to my car.
It's Alan Park, it'll be chill. The other thing I've been doing recently, I've booted up The Arrhythmia again for, like, the millionth time. Like, I specifically Curtain Call, like the second one that came out, because I played that one a lot more than the first one, and I'm just playing it more. There's no real fun story behind it. I've got like over 100 hours in that game, and I just keep fucking playing it.
You don't even like Final Fantasy.
I do. I like Final Fantasy.
I mean, she probably like.
I like Final Fantasy more than
you. All told, she honestly probably does like Final Fantasy more than me.
I have finished Final Fantasy games. Dustin has not finished any Final Fantasy game.
Well, he doesn't play the music game either.
That doesn't. He likes rhythm games more than me.
True.
This is like Splatoon is the one shooter that I like. Thearrhythmia is like the one rhythm game I really like for no reason. Like,
I mean, you like the music.
Yeah, I love the music.
It's not a bad one of
those. Thearrhythmia is the reason that I wanted to play 9 anyway because I'd never played it before. I'm like, this music's real good.
Mm-hmm. Good game.
Yeah. Very neat.
I'm just having fun. I've got like.
That's
I'm
the beautiful...
technically still unlocking stuff in that game because it kind of never ends, but nothing is of consequence anymore.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about rhythm games, period, is that there's no barrier to entry to pick it back up and pretty much no like amount of time you'd have to play it before you decide to stop. Like, you can boot it up almost at any point and play for between, like, you know, 5 minutes or an hour, like, whatever you feel like,
I've
and then just
both.
Immediately stop. But they're excellent, like... I've got 20 minutes and want to occupy myself with something. Let's do this.
Basically. So I've been having fun with that while I wait for other games to come out.
Neat. It's a cool thing. I think the only thing I'll throw in before we talk about Destiny is I finished Sonic Mania, which that game's still cool, but I think the thing I said a couple weeks ago still applies, where I don't think I'd still... Personally, I don't think I'd recommend it to somebody who isn't down with playing a Sonic game, period.
Yeah.
Like, my opinion of that game is if you've never played a Sonic game, you probably still aren't going to get a ton out of it. But if you ever liked Sonic 2, that game is pretty cool. And I found myself with both, like, a higher level of reverence for some of the level design in that game and Sonic games in general, but also, like, that reverence cemented that opinion that, like, I don't think you could just recommend that game to necessarily anybody and they would just go at it. And I kind of saw that in practice. We were watching, one of the guys from Giant Bomb play it. Like, he just played... He played, like, 20 or 30 minutes of it while playing other stuff online. And watching people who haven't played Sonic games but then go try to play that game, the way that the levels are even laid out is so bizarre that, like,
It's a fucking mess.
If you don't
mess.
Know what's going on with those games, I can see how people get, like, psychologically tripped up, because he would basically go through a loop, and then, like, the second it stopped him from running to the right, he would stop and reevaluate his entire, like, oh, wait, is this the right way to go? And the correct answer, in the, if you've played those games before, is to just keep running. And it doesn't matter,
I
like...
I thought that was obvious.
Yeah, well, yeah,
it's
but
not.
I mean, like,
really
I can
isn't.
Totally see, like, if you're, you know, if you're either completely inexperienced with them, or if you're just, like, a kid, and you've played, you know, Super Mario World, because your dad put that in front of you. Oh, sorry. I was fidgeting and
stop
made a
it.
Noise.
Keep talking. Stop it.
But, like, if you played, like, other platformers... The thing in those
right.
games is, you know...
You run to the right.
Yeah, you run to the right, and they're relatively linear. And the thing about almost all of those Sonic levels are, you know, you'll go up and down and left and right and diagonally, and sometimes...
And it's a mess.
And occasionally you'll be moving so fast you're not actually sure, like, did I double back and, like, cover ground that I have to cover again? Or, like, they're confusing. They can be confusing in a way that if you don't understand that the thing is to just keep moving, period... they're like a little obtuse in a way that is kind of like unique to the way that those games are built. Like I can, like Mario Maker is amazing because once you have simple tools, anybody can build a Mario level. I don't know that you could make a Sonic Maker
no,
and like
that
have people even like fathom how you build weird levels like that without like 10 hours of background on like, all right, well, so now you want the loops to go back on themselves, but only sometimes. And then like, it's just, they're just really weirdly designed. Like that game is, the Sonic games are basically like jazz. Like, look, we don't care where you get. We just want you to keep going. Like whatever notes pop in along the way, you know, it's fine. Just keep plucking along and eventually you'll see Dr. Robotnik and then move on to the next one. But I did enjoy that game. It is a good, $20 is exactly the right price. Like,
all
right. If it were a dollar more, it might be a little much, but it is like a perfect amount of content. And it, honestly, if it were any longer than it is, I don't know like that I would have wanted to stick around for like two times as much game as they put in there. Cause I want to say it took me like 5 to 6 hours like of play time to beat it, which is about what I needed. Like I was like, I really don't need more of this. And
you
the last
want
couple,
more than that.
Yeah, and the last couple of boss fights were really well done. Like, none of them were terrible, but some of the last few were pretty amazing. like, I liked the stuff that they were doing in them. Although I did encounter a super amazing bug where... so that when you pick your, like, character setup in that game, you could play as either Sonic, Knuckles, or Sonic and Tails together. And in that mode, it's basically, like, Tails is just, like, an AI that follows you around, and you're controlling Sonic. And I picked that one... And then in the final boss fight, there's a thing where he'll materialize these arms and then grab your character and then teleport you to an entirely different stage. And then you have to basically fight a sub-boss before returning to the main boss. Mm-hmm. And if that happens and he grabs Tails instead of Sonic, the whole fight just softlocks and you can't do anything except reset the battle. I waited for like 30 or 40 seconds. I'm like, did they account for this? Is this like a thing that's supposed to happen? But no, Tails is just trapped forever in these weird floating hands, and you can just jump around the screen and do nothing, and then eventually you just have to reset the whole boss fight to give it another try.
Huh. It's still a Sonic game, guys. Spoiler alert.
But other than that, I actually had a lot of fun. That game is...
I still loved when Doug got stuck on that propeller blade and, like, literally couldn't jump off, and it stayed that way for, like, hours.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, he wouldn't give up.
Good for him.
That happened at Gen Con.
Okay.
It was great.
Tried his best. But, yeah, I like that game. That Never and, for some reason, the boss in the Oil Ocean Zone, it took me, like, 10 or 20 tries to beat it, and I don't know why that was. I feel like it shouldn't have been as hard as it was for me, but I did finally get through it. But.
I believe.
Yeah, that game's cool if you like Sonic. And
nope.
If you don't, it's probably fine to never play it. Like, I don't think you're missing out on much in general. If you skip that game without, you know, having any particular reverence for the way those old games are put together.
What? I would maybe play that game, but I definitely would not pay money to play that game.
There you go. Yeah, I like that. Like, if it comes up for free on PSN, you know, download it and then check
never
it out until
it.
You're bored.
Pretty much.
I like it.
Get
it's
to Chemical
plan.
Plant Zone and cry. This fuck Chemical Plant
Zone. No, the music's so good.
But the level's so bad.
Eh.
It's so bad.
Eh. It's fine.
Eh.
Like I said, it's gonna be okay, Lorraine.
No, it's not.
You don't
Sonic
need to play.
Wrong
you don't need
me.
To play Sonic Mania.
I will not.
But you might, maybe someday, maybe you'll need to play Destiny.
I doubt
maybe
it.
Maybe not. I mean, but anything's possible. So how are you guys doing in Destiny? How far did you get? Because I booted that game up. I booted that game up this afternoon and basically got to the part where it's a video game. Like, I played until you get to the first, like, the hub world, and then
the farm.
That was it. So I played for, like, an hour, basically.
Yeah, I didn't get much farther than that. I got basically one or two levels further than that.
Okay.
Two missions further than that. So sure. Maybe an extra hour on top of it. I got to the first explorable area, which was really cool, and a pretty different design take than the explorable areas in Destiny 1, so I was kind of surprised by how different it was. But
it's definitely the thing they've changed the most about this game, I think.
Yeah.
At least in terms of the actual game, and not so much the bells and whistles of how you interact with other people.
Right, or PvP or whatever, but yeah. The explorable area is a lot more compact, seems to be more story-driven, seems to be more of like a traditional MMO, like almost like a hub in an explorable area. Like, everyone's hanging out in the same areas, and it feels like there's a lot more player activity. It's not as open in terms of just, oh, I could be on my speeder bike and be biking for 10 minutes and not see another human being.
Right.
Like, that's not going to happen in the new explorable area. So.
It has a map!
I didn't even know that.
And cool. Fast travel.
I which, didn't know that either.
For 2017, seems like a given, but for people playing Destiny 1, you didn't have those things.
Right. Fast travel was awful. Getting on Sparrow and going. And it wasn't...
not really knowing where you were going.
Right, yeah.
So
even
like
now,
No Man's
the boat
Sky.
Is slowing.
Whoa. Yep. I mean, you can load up the... even though I didn't go anywhere, but I just did it because the prompt said so, you can load up the map that shows you where space is without having to go up in your ship and wait through a loading screen first.
Right.
So that's pretty
it
fucking
cuts
cool.
Out a lot of loading screens just for that.
Also, the load times in general are just significantly better.
That's good.
It was designed for current generation hardware.
Shit.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's no PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 versions to kneecap everything about it, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, the load times seem to be like a third of what they were in Destiny. So it's not even like they're a little bit faster. They're way faster.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of engine stuff. Like, I bet some of the reasons the way their level builds were so weird when you read those articles where it would say, like, you know, we made a change to this map and then had to bake it for 26 hours and then pray it didn't crash.
Right.
Like, I'm assuming stuff that they changed in that pipeline also didn't hurt, like, the functional... like, loading those levels live and having them run in the game, so... yeah, probably a top-to-bottom back-end rework, I would assume.
Right, I'm guessing, yeah. It looks and feels like it, for the most part.
But it also still feels like, at least the moving around part, it definitely still feels like Destiny. Like, it's still a Bungie shooter, is like...
The physics are still basically the same, and the gunplay is still basically the same.
It feels like the same game in a lot of ways like that.
And in that part, I'm totally down with, because like that's it's like macaroni and cheese for me, like playing a Bungie-style shooter. I just like, look, I want to jump, and I want
to
punch aliens,
know how to do it.
And I want to shoot guns that feel like those guns, like all the going all the way back to like Halo 1, that like every game they've ever made has a certain, like there's something about the way that they're tweaked just so, that like there's those games have a very specific like texture to them that most other shooters don't.
For all the complaints about Destiny 1 over the last few years, that's one thing that people haven't really complained about. So
yeah,
I'm glad they didn't
day one.
Yeah, it's, you know, you complained about the story and a lot of the production elements and quality of life stuff, but nobody really complained about the physics or the game, the gunplay. So I'm glad they didn't change them just to change them.
Yeah, I like it for sure. I'm still, at least the first foot forward, like I said, I've only played, you know, literally the intro and nothing else, but from the word go, I have a tepid expectation that the story stuff will, from the get-go, be a little more complete and a little less jumbled together than Destiny was, just because it looks like they're setting up a narrative that will hopefully have a beginning,
a
middle,
story.
And end in this disc.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is like, I still never felt at any point when I played whatever iteration of Destiny 1 that there was, like, there were individual, like, sets of missions or whatever that kind of did that, but the shipping game, like, the first thing they put out was just like so discordant. It was just such a weird jumble of like, I'm doing a thing for these guys, and then another thing for these guys, and then a third thing for these other guys, and I'm not sure how any of it's related to anything else.
You can do them all in any order.
Right. Yeah. Not having played past, you know, basically the first couple of missions, I have heard and read that the story doesn't drop off at any point. Like, it stays as cohesive as it seems like it's going. Now, we won't be dissatisfied.
Good. I hope that's the case. But it definitely seems like that. Like, even, like, down to the, like I said, that opening mission and the way that it's structured feels more like, you know, it feels more like the Halo games did in terms of, like, here's a setup with, like, both some good-looking cutscenes and, like, some characters in the world doing active, not like NPCs that stand there and then, like, load up menus, but, like, you know, here's a guy opening a door, here's a dude with you taking cover while, like, you're shooting down some shit. Like, it just looks like they learned that lesson, at least from the beginning, like, from the start of that game.
Yeah. The light! The dark!
There's actual, like, cinematography and...
Sure.
Like, it feels like someone wrote it instead of, like, programmers
had to
program it without any direction.
Right.
Beep, beep.
This is the number of factions we're going to have, and these are, like, the seven types of enemies that exist, and now puzzle piece them together so we have, you know...
Right.
Roughly 20 hours of content. I'm just
imagining them, like, having the engine running, and then it's hooked up to, like, a dot matrix printer, and it's just, like, printing off story that's happening. Like, oh, yes, of course. This is how this fits together. The game writes itself.
I think there's been more story in the first hour of Destiny 2 than there was in basically all of Destiny 1. Definitely, like, the second
mission...
I care
about the story, at least.
Right.
Damn.
The second mission was more impactful, like, emotionally than all of Destiny 1, for sure. Like, without even question.
Right.
That's funny.
Really, that game really brings you down so that it can spend the rest of the game bringing you back up.
Right, sure, exactly. Because, like, I get, like, they in this game, within the first hour, basically, they set up, like, here's what you're about, here's what the bad guy's about, and, like, here are the stakes. Whereas in Destiny 1, by that period of time, like, I feel like they had just finished expositioning all over you about, like,
Wizards
this is
the
Traveler,
moon.
And that's what it does, and so on and so forth, and then, like...
Shove your ghost in some things.
Right. Defend a computer terminal for 15 minutes, and then...
Oh, Destiny.
Yeah, I'm into it. It seems cool. And like I said, that game feels the way I want it to feel, so that alone will get me into, like, I'm going to max level for sure, and then hopefully we'll do the raid together.
Yeah,
and then we'll go from there.
All the team stuff. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. That way, when we do Destiny 3, we'll have a cool cutscene at the beginning cataloging all our cool Destiny 2 accomplishments.
That was pretty neat.
Yeah, I do think that is awesome. Right down to, like, I wonder how many iterations they went through, because even, like, the art that they put for each of those little things is so, like, minimal, but it's also really impressive. Like, it's just, they're really cool-looking little slides that, like, correspond with your database data for, like, here's that raid you beat.
Right. It was, like, 13 or 14 if you'd done all of the things that they looked at.
Yeah.
Maybe not even that much.
I'm guessing there's one or two that I didn't do, but...
Yeah, there were a couple I didn't have. I really liked that it showed you the party and the date of the day you did it. I saw your guys' names on the ones that we did together. It's like, that was pretty cool. I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. I said same thing. I was like, I remember that too. Oh, that was so much fun. Man, Destiny, right? Yeah. What a video game.
Bringing people
and
together.
The best thing is that's a great way to start the game, because you're sitting there feeling really high on all the things you've done before, and then your character gets annihilated.
Right. Ripped to the face.
Rip.
Fighting wild dogs.
While a violin just, like, caresses you with pure sorrow.
Yep, yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, you're bummed out, right? Because you better be.
Get sad, bro.
Yeah, shoot some dogs.
Yeah. No, opening a lot. The opening was really good. The one, the part where you're injured went on for maybe a smidge longer than I would have wanted it to.
Yeah,
it did. Like, walking slowly while basically nothing happens other than you hold the stick forward is not
cool.
The most engaging thing in the world. But it didn't last so long that I was, like, rolling my eyes at it. It was just, like, All right, I get it. Let's go play.
Come on, game.
Let's go, game.
Give me my gun.
Yeah, exactly. Give me my gun. Give me a gun back. Because that's, like, the abilities where, like, before then, you've done all the things you can do, and then that's the part where they suck it all away from you. The Metroid.
Right, I
the Metroid moment.
Exactly the thing they do in a Metroid game.
Give them the Samus.
Actually, the intro, because I really haven't known, like, I haven't done any deep dives on what the content stuff is in Destiny 2, like, up until just booting it up. So, is all the original, all or most of the original subclass stuff in this game? Because I was surprised that I still had my Warlock and it still had the Void stuff, and I didn't even know if that was going to be necessarily in this game or not.
Everybody starts with the same class, and it's, by the end, you will have unlocked the same three classes.
Okay.
At least to start.
Gotcha.
I think some have been retooled some, but...
Each class basically has a new subclass that replaces an old one.
Because the Warlock loses fire one?
Yeah, it's like a fire arrow.
Okay,
instead of like the solar resurrection thing.
Yeah, that's gone.
Yeah, and then Void Titans, instead of being bubble-oriented, are more like Captain America. They have a shield and run around.
The bouncy shield stuff.
Yeah.
Which looks like a good time. But,
yeah, it's super cool.
One thing I noticed is you'll get those trees maxed out pretty much by the time you hit max level or close to it or not long after it. Where in the old game, you had to grind away at your tree for I don't know, like a month to unlock it all.
Right. Yeah. And then grind a new
really
tree.
Dumb.
And then
right. And then you do it two more
and then
times.
A different character. And then
man.
Yeah. I think having like played Destiny 1 and then taking a long hiatus and then jumping back in for like 40 or 50 fresh hours, I think I only maxed one of the subclasses and got most of the way down to like a second one.
That's realistic.
Right, yeah.
Delightful.
It seems neat. I'm looking forward to play more of it.
They've been streamlined down a lot too, I think, for the better.
Yeah, they made the class talents trees a little bit more concise.
Now they have, like, I don't know, 15 talents each class. The old ones had to have been at least double that.
Sure.
The old ones had a bunch of basically pointless stat talents that just modified the stats.
Oh, right, the ones that, like, you would basically set them to one thing and then never change them because you knew what you wanted to get out of it, but you could technically, I'm going to trade a bunch of mobility for health or whatever. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But before you unlocked that tier, you were gimped as all hell.
Oh, sure. Like, before you got the one you wanted, it was just like, all right, I guess.
You didn't even have that tier. You're just weaker than everyone else.
Right.
Get sad.
But at the end of the day, the numbers on it were such that it barely even mattered. Like, the difference between maximum health and minimum health was 5% of your total health. So, it was a whole lot of nothing, really, that took up space.
Sure, like a minor change that was probably worth just scrubbing from the record just to make the UI even in that part simpler. Yeah, I like it. That seems cool. I have, a kind of pointless question, but I'm curious what the answer is. What? How do you guys play with the controls on Destiny? Do you switch them from the defaults, or do you just play what comes out of the box?
I switched the melee to the right click stick, R3, I think.
Okay, because I did the same thing.
That's the only functional change I give it.
I think the preset that I picked in Destiny 2 was like Green Thumb or something.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I use.
I was just curious if you guys bothered to change them at all or not, because I've been so conditioned to... At this point, I've played enough Call of Duty that I want. that has been the new thing that is ingrained to me in terms of...
Is that a Call of Duty thing?
Yeah, Call of Duty was always the, like, left stick sprints, right stick does melee. L2 is aim down sights. Like, before Bungie games had aiming down sights,
that
was the
Call of Duty thing. I think that all of these control schemes even date back to Halo 2, maybe even Halo 1.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, circle the crouch.
There was definitely a Halo game where right stick was the default melee. They've changed it up a few times.
Sure.
The only change that I make to my control scheme is I switch the trigger buttons. So R1 and R2 and L1 and L2 are switched.
Oh, gotcha. I did like that was a separate option. Like that, in addition to just changing all the layouts, you can just swap the trigger buttons, which was neat.
Yep. I don't have to pull down the trigger as far for my weapon to fire, basically, because it's just the short bumpers on the upper shoulders.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Instead of having to pull an actual trigger down. And then the triggers are assigned to melee and grenade, I think.
Neat. Yeah, that's funny. Real cool. But even like looking at the different control setups they have, like it's kind of
there's
like
a lot of stuff.
Right, and you're like divining through the history of both Bungie games and first person shooters, because when you go back to those older Halo games and they didn't have all the things that basically Call of Duty introduced into the like they didn't have aim down sights or
yeah,
you know, they didn't have like the sprint, which I think that Reach was the first game that had, and it was like a class option in Reach.
It was either 3 or Reach.
Yeah. Where running was a thing, because those older Halo games were much more traditional in that, like, look, you just point the gun and you shoot it, and you can throw grenades.
Right.
But then like crouch, I think was on the main stick in like Halo 1 and 2. Because the crouch on circle is also a thing that I definitely remember from Call of Duty. And, like, you can do the dolphin dive thing, where this game it's more like a slide, but, like, if you're running and you crouch, you'll do the, like, scoot.
Get scooting.
Or, like, that even might be, like, Titanfall, but that's all, you know. It all comes from the everything in a first-person shooter either comes from Call of Duty or Halo at this point, if it's designed primarily for consoles, so.
The most widely used competitive control scheme is bumper jumper, because it gives you more control while you're in the air so that you can maneuver. and as I'm sure Kyle will probably attest, it's very difficult if you're not using a different control scheme to like be running, jumping, aiming, and firing all at the same time with the default control scheme.
Sure.
Just because you only have two thumbs and it doesn't work that well.
Do I, though?
Because you have to take your thumb off of your aim, the right joystick, to be able to jump, basically, is the problem.
I've definitely gotten good at hitting the... Because I've jumped to X. I've gotten myself to use the right stick and still be able to press X.
Right, yeah.
With, like, you can either claw it or half of my thumb.
Yeah, right. There's a couple of different ways to do it, yeah.
I like it. Sometimes,
there's definitely times where I'm, like... using
sometimes
weird parts of my hands to move joysticks while I'm playing.
For sure. No, that's
like
cool.
A partial flaw. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I said, the thing...
The real solution is bumper jumper.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Too late now.
Yeah.
Too late now, exactly right.
I never played enough PvP that stuff was never a going concern. Like, none of the AI enemies were so intense that you necessarily had to worry about that just to come out of fights alive, but I can definitely, like, all that stuff is basically necessary if you're gonna be playing against humans.
Right. I mean, for as much as Kyle and I and Wade have all played, none of us ever picked up Bumper Jumper anyway, and we've all still been pretty successful, so we're never going to beat, like,
Wade's probably played so much Halo 2 that whatever habits he picked up there are unforgettable, undroppable.
In some cases. He is going to be playing on the PC with...
Is he still getting that?
Yeah, also. Mm-hmm. So.
I think you can... I'm trying to look this up, because... Yeah, I think, I'm not 100% certain, but I'm not about 90% sure. I think you can play with keyboard and mouse on console now if you want to.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
at least
there's
a couple of different...
A PlayStation keyboard you can buy or whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe even just a USB.
I was pretty sure that was the case, but I mean, that's cool, like, for people who want to do that. It's still the weird, like, I mean, we already had that discussion at least once, basically, of, you know, how do you put keyboard players and controller players together?
Right, yeah.
And the current solution is just the auto-aim stuff, right?
For PC it is, and that stuff's not even programmed into the console version at all. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't necessarily know that. That's funny.
Yeah, so for PC, if you're using a controller, it basically increases your auto-aim to compensate for the fact that keyboard and mouse players will just be better than you otherwise.
Sure.
And for console, they just assume you're playing on a controller, which is like 95% true, but there's definitely been... Since the game came out, people who completely ruined PvP using a keyboard and mouse in a game where no one else is doing it. So, interestingly, the look sensitivity is capped a lot lower on the consoles, so even if you are using a keyboard and mouse, you can only turn so fast.
Okay, yeah, that makes some sense.
Interesting.
I've seen people already worried that they're saying that you're going to take a controller and map it to a keyboard so that you get the controller buff, essentially, and still use a keyboard.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, so that, I would say, yeah, that's
totally
basically like...
That.
Yeah, that's like built-in, like, aimbots, basically.
Exactly.
That's pretty funny.
Exactly. That's actually really obvious now that, you know...
Now that you said it out loud.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Fine. I wouldn't play on PC even if I could.
Right, yeah, same here.
I mean, if I were, I would use the controller, but sure.
Yeah, Yeah, me too.
And like I said, that's the whole, when you're talking about lineage, like, I've played enough Bungie first-person shooters at this point that, like, even if I were comfortable playing with a keyboard and mouse on other games, I don't think I would switch for this one. Like, there's too many years of jumping and meleeing and grenading.
it's just like Smash Brothers. Like, yeah. I don't think I could play a Smash Brothers game without a GameCube controller, no matter what, basically. Like, my brain would break.
Do you see people trying to build or market a basically an arcade stick for Smash Brothers?
Oh, man, I did not, but that sounds like... I mean,
for Melee, like, with all the advanced stuff.
Is it, like, do you know if the stick part is just, like, a standard, like, it looks arcade like a standard, cabinet-style
yeah,
stick? Or is it
stick.
Analog in some way? Because that whole game is, like, you know, it'd have to be, right? To do tilts and stuff like that? Like, it couldn't just be a digital, like, 8-way or even, like, 49-way stick or whatever.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. That would definitely feel weird. You would not be used to that.
I would love to put my hands on one of those. Like, I would love to try that once just to see what it feels like, but that sounds wild.
The other thing is, even just for the button inputs, it reads your sensitivity when you're putting up a shield or you're jumping.
That's a
huge deal with L&R.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's why they don't think that it's going to be able to be played on, I think, any other system. It's just no other system can read those analog inputs
to the
L&R.
Analog to digital clicks and the triggers or whatever. Yeah. GameCube controller is real weird, but it's real awesome.
Real cool, right?
Melee is a really cool, complicated game.
There was much lesser known than that GameCube stuff, because basically you can hold that controller for like 5 minutes and understand like the eccentricities of the triggers and stuff. But there's a weird thing with... I don't think the PS4 still has it. The PS3 might not have even had it. But on the PlayStation 2, the face buttons on that controller were technically analog. Like, they weren't just on-off, they had depth to the throw. Because Metal Gear Solid 2 was built that way, where if you, like, basically if you push the face button to pull up your gun to aim, you could drop your gun without shooting if you let it the button off very slowly. And then that wasn't existent when they ported those games over to, like, the Xbox 360, that you couldn't do that, basically, because they were just digital buttons. So it essentially made that game slightly harder to play on those other platforms.
Right.
But... it's a really weird, like, that's a thing that, like, that Metal Gear is the only game I can even think of that took advantage of that.
Because, of course,
it is.
It
is a thing that that
of
controller
did. Of course,
too.
It did. That is an aggressively Metal Gear thing to do.
Aggressively Metal Gear.
Aggressively.
Indeed.
Yes.
But analog on controllers, other than sticks, even, I think is kind of neat. Like, I like the. Like you said, when it comes to just, like, making your gun shoot as fast as possible, you don't necessarily want the throw. But I really like the analog triggers on all the modern console controllers. Like, for racing games and stuff, it's real cool to have it, like, you know, have the full degrees of movement or whatever. And I don't know. I like some analog control on a controller. It's pretty neat. What a thing. You doing okay, Lorraine? You gonna survive the...
I'm great. Keep going.
The alien onslaught.
Pew, pew, pew. pew pew.
But I mean, that's about it. Like, I just want to play more Destiny at this point.
Pretty much.
That's what I'm gearing up for after this feast of a meal.
I like it. I mean, that honestly, that's good enough for me for the moment. So if you guys have anything else, like Destiny related or otherwise, that anyone wants to throw out before we get out of here,
it's fun. It's a fun game.
It's better than Destiny 1 in most, if not all, ways.
Cool.
That's good. It definitely, again, with only about an hour under my belt, it seems like it's, like, you know, all the UI is pretty similar. The gameplay part seems like it's, you know, almost identical in a good way, like the literal nuts and bolts of how things move and how things react or whatever. I really just can't wait to see what kind of content is in it, specifically like the shipping game, because obviously, you know, they'll be putting out expansions until there is a Destiny 3.
10-year plan, man. 10-year fucking plan.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the other thing is I'll be... it's so distant now that I totally don't care, but it will be interesting to see what happens with the Destiny 3. Like, is this game going to be mature enough that they'll be able to do a more true cutover and, like, actually import things like, you know, stats and abilities and stuff like that? Or are they going to have to have another reset button?
Wipe.
Where, like, hey, Destiny 3, guess what? Whatever the new base is... It got ruined again.
Oh, no.
The light. They took the light away. Again.
Oh, wah, wah, wah.
I'm sure they can come up with some equally bland plot devices
sure.
to explain it away.
Yeah,
I hope
yeah,
so.
I on the one hand, just being able to take over gear is problematic immediately, just because it means that you're relying on old gear being like perfectly designed and balanced.
And that part I wouldn't even necessarily
expect. Or you're redesigning it.
Yeah, that part I wouldn't even necessarily expect as much as like, basically just like a level, like even if the exact abilities aren't even exactly the same, but I would expect to see a number attached to your player higher than one
right.
carry mm-hmm. over from mm-hmm. one game to the next.
Like some
sure.
form
yeah,
of like new
sure.
game plus almost. Like not
yeah.
doesn't have to be everything,
mm-hmm.
but there's
mm-hmm.
certain things. Like I still kind of can't believe the cosmetic shit didn't transfer
that's
over.
That's what I was going to
well,
say.
That's
like,
still,
that's still
so,
just like,
they just
yeah.
couldn't make it happen or want to sell you all that stuff again.
Probably.
And it might be a combination of the two.
Thing.
Like in terms of,
yeah.
you know, in terms of where they're going to invest man hours, that stuff is amazing for legacy players, and it's still incredibly shitty that it doesn't come over. But at the end of the day,
right.
you know, if you've been playing Destiny for the last 3 years or whatever, would you rather have a better video game, or would you rather have, you know, all your dances come back? And the best answer mm-hmm. is both, but if you had to choose one or the other.
But dances.
I've got some cool banners from playing Destiny 1.
Yeah, the banners that ported over, or not ported over, but, you know, the veteran banners are pretty neat. But that's the
yeah.
only thing you got.
But that's it. Right? There's nothing else.
Mm-hmm. And that cool slideshow to log in,
which is really cool. But...
Yep, still really really neat. The other thing I kind of want to try, I want to go back to Destiny 1 and like do a thing that I didn't do before, and then see if it surfaces. In like,
I doubt it.
Because I think
oh,
you
yeah.
can look back at that later if you want to. Like you can revisit your
yes,
slideshow
you
of accomplishments.
Yeah.
If it's like anything else, that they set a hard date for when it, you know, this is your character data that we're going to look at when we go to Destiny 2, and it was
sure.
like August 1st.
I mean, that definitely makes
right,
the most
yeah.
sense.
Mm.
So you're
yeah,
you're probably
sure
correct.
That.
But
it was a snapshot, basically.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, because the funny, weird thing about Destiny right now, actually, is that, like, you know, if in a true MMO, like, in WoW, when they did these big world-changing events... Like, the data on the server was changed, and it was all one client, so it was like, that old world is actually gone, and the new world
yeah,
is
right.
here from here on.
You can't
on.
Go back to it.
But technically, you
right.
know, at any point, you can just go back to
go
the
back
Destiny
to the
that
tower
was.
Whenever I want.
Yeah, exactly, until they,
Aha.
you know, until they shut that game down in a couple of years, but, like, for right,
right
now,
we'll
the world
it.
Of Destiny 1 and the world of Destiny 2 just exist alongside each other, which is, like,
Whoa.
Fine, but it is just kind of funny, like... It's weird.
It's really easy in my brain to just dismiss that Destiny 1 exists at all because
Pretty
I will
much.
Maybe never play it again.
Mm.
Like,
I was going to trade it into GameStop, but they wouldn't even take it.
Right, like a raw, like a loose,
right.
just
it's
literal Destiny 1 launch disc.
Yeah.
Although I guess even the expansions, that's right, the disc only had Destiny 1 on it because I remember
right.
now. I bought the compilation or whatever last year. Then, yeah, the disc inside it
base
was just unpatched Destiny 1, and then all
yep.
the other content
mm-hmm.
was downloadable.
Cool.
Huh. Yeah, I can't wait to play more of that game.
Blah, blah,
I'm going to probably
Let's
play a little more of it tonight after I got to go do
all right.
one or two other random things, but I'm hoping it won't take that long.
Blah, blah,
Let's
blah,
do
blah.
It.
Well, I'll be up probably pretty late playing, so if you get online tonight, I'll see you.
Okay.
I shouldn't be on late, but maybe I will be. So we'll see.
There we go.
Roll
Sounds
the
good.
Dice.
Oh,
gosh.
Kyle's freaking out again.
Whoa.
Damn microphones. All right. Well, that's good enough for me. Lorraine, do you have anything? Want to throw anything into the ring
yeah,
before
I mean,
we get out of here?
I monopolized an early portion of this talking about Pokemon nonsense. So.
I mean, I like Pokemon nonsense.
I do. I do as well.
It's pretty good.
A guy that makes Pokemon thought that the Switch was going to be a failure.
Well.
Whoops.
All right.
Danger. He also not him. Not there's somebody at. This is mostly unrelated, but there was somebody at the Pokemon Company. I forget who it was who doubled down on PvP and trading in Pokemon Go in some interview. Which still like so those things are supposedly coming, but I still can't even fathom what PvP would be in that game. Because like,
I wouldn't know.
Like,
yeah.
why would you ever
yeah.
want to just
Probably
tap your phone?
Probably gonna be ass.
Yeah, why
like,
would you
sure.
ever just
yeah.
not tap your phone harder than someone who's like standing next to you for no reason? Like,
yeah.
I just we'll see, I guess. But like, that sounds so shitty on paper that like, as someone who really likes yep. Pokemon Go, that sounds like such a bad experience. That, like,
right.
I would love to be proven wrong that like they could either change the battle system or come up with something else that's worth using. But
I feel like they've still talked about reworking how battling works. I'm not sure if that was just like if changing how the gyms function was their answer to that. But I feel like there was at least talk at one point of like the way you fight isn't going to be the same forever. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. Find out. But it's still like that's like. Yeah, we'll see. But it just seems like such a shitty, at least right now, it seems like a bad use of everyone's time to try to do that game.
But there's still talk. There was a recent interview with, I don't remember exactly who it was by, but they're still talking about, not specifically about the next Pokemon game is going to be on the Switch, I believe.
Oh, right. Yep.
Okay, yeah.
After Ultra. Mm-hmm. Which come out like later this year, which I keep forgetting about because I kind of don't care. I don't know. I feel so. I, for lack of a better word, I feel kind of burned by Sun and Moon, just because like
same here.
It was like interesting up to a point, and then there's still nothing to do afterwards. Like it's insane how bare bones the past two gens of games have been. Like, in regards to post-game content, like...
I mean, that's definitely something. Like, you're not wrong there.
Because Gen 5 was incredible! There was so much shit to do!
Black and White 2 were incredible. Yeah. Black and White 1 didn't have anything after the campaign.
There was some, like, there was a whole second half of the map. There was more in Black and White 1 than there was in either X and Y or Sun and Moon.
I mean, that's fair. There still wasn't much.
But it was more. It was less than previous games, but, like, worlds beyond what we've gotten recently.
It's usually the third game, the third installment, that rounds it out and adds post-game content, like an Emerald or a Crystal. And we didn't get one of those for X or Y.
And even, like Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire were the literal exact same way. There was nothing you could do. Like, look back at, like, Fire Red and Leaf Green and Heart Gold and Soul Silver... added so much more afterwards. Like, I mean, Gold and Silver are still already huge games, like some of the biggest Pokemon games, and there was still extra stuff to do after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's just like, I mean, like Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire hurt me, and then Sun and Moon poured some salt in that wound.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just assuming that there's gonna be like even more, like, Ultra Sun and Moon are just going to jump acid on my arm or something like that and just literally leave horrible scar tissue, and I'll never want to play a new Pokemon game again.
Damn.
I'm getting worried, man.
Well, that stuff makes you wonder, because, like, if they're approaching those games the way I would think most Western developers would these days, that makes me wonder if that's not, like, a metadata-driven decision. Because, like, either you know, they take surveys, or they just take kind of the general pulse of the community, or they literally mine data from, like, you know, since the 3DS is internet-connected, they can technically have information on how you play those games just from you booting it up and playing it. Like, I wonder if some of those decisions are driven by how much players tend to do that, period. Because, like, I can totally understand the argument from internally for, like, the Pokemon dev team of, well, the endgame content for Pokemon is you just play other people in Pokemon.
No.
Like, they're like, you beat the Elite Four, and now your thing is, you know, you either play PvP or you don't. Like, I could totally see that being the driving force for why there hasn't been more of a post-campaign single-player experience in those games.
But I know how to Pokemon now, and there's nothing I can do with them aside from just run to the Battle Maceon or kill myself in the Battle Tree, and it's so boring. If I could just do multi-battles online, that would be different, but I can't.
Ugh. Send your complaints to care of the Pokemon Company.
Yeah, they're not going to listen to me.
Send them a postcard.
No, they're not going to listen.
But yeah, we'll see.
I have played so little of... Like, I finished the regional decks in that game, which got me the Shining Charm, but I haven't done jack shit with it because I don't really care, and I hardly played Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. The most I played of a game was, like, Y. I played so much of Y.
Sounds like you should consider playing Destiny.
No.
Yeah, now you're talking.
No, I'm
good. It's like
good.
Pokemon, but instead of collecting creatures, you collect guns.
That's so less fun. That's so boring.
You can get shiny it's guns, so though.
I don't care.
Indeed. Oh, man. I think I want to close on one last, and I'll see if you guys agree with me, and then we'll leave it there for this week. But I had some thoughts, like some shower thoughts, basically, on Sun and Moon, just like driving home from being out of the house one day. No, so there's something, like, I totally get what you're saying, and that's not a thing that I have ran into with recent Pokemon games.
Yeah, 'cause you don't finish
them. At most, I finished the, like, I beat the Elite Four, and then I'm done.
Yeah, right.
I did that in X and Y and Black and White. I did that in some of those modern
like
games.
Two gens ago. That's whatever. Like four games ago.
You don't need
ago.
To defend yourself, Dustin. Go on.
That's right. But no, one of the things that I think, and this is a thing that I honestly think stuffed some of my enthusiasm for Sun and Moon a little bit. You go back to Pokemon Red and Blue.
Oh, great.
I think one of the things that resonated with like children specifically about those games, like why they kind of took up so much of, you know, we were kids at the time, of our like imagination, is that when you're a kid, your world feels small and you wish it were bigger. Like you're like, when I grow up, I'm going to be like, you're looking forward to being an adult until you grow up and you realize that it's very boring. But but as a kid, your desire is to like be a grown up and to like, to be in the larger world. And I think those games honestly give you, like, a simulation of that. Like, they put you on an adventure, and you go all over this crazy world, and, like, the literal story is, you're a child, but now you're, like, going to live a life.
It's a coming-of-age story.
Yeah, and the world,
a person
like...
leaving home to explore the world for the first time.
Yeah, and even through that, like, the shitty-looking green Game Boy screen... Like, the amount of time it takes you to traverse all that landmass and see all the stuff in that world, like, it feels huge. And then if you fast-forward all the way to Sun and Moon, I feel like the psychological layout of the world, where it's just these super small islands and you kind of bounce from one
terrible.
To the other. Like, I think that that game loses that almost completely.
I haven't disliked a region more since Gen 4.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel like a continuous, like, it doesn't feel like you're exploring a world that's unfolding in front of you. It feels like you're going from, like, one box to another different box.
Definitely.
Right, yeah.
And for
Sun and Moon were designed
so
very poorly.
And particularly designed that, like, you don't get lost and you aren't really exploring.
Yeah.
You're just sort of walking along a path.
It's like you're a tourist. You're not, like, really,
yeah.
You're not, like, digging in the tall grass to find these horrible creatures. It's just like, oh, here's the trail marker, stay by the handrail, don't go
over. Yeah, like,
on
some level, it's like the first 20 hours of Final Fantasy XIII, except instead of literally walking in a straight line, it's, you know, walk in the line that we've made for you, and then just keep walking along that line.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly do think that was part of, for me, I was like, you know, this
You're
doesn't
not
feel...
Wrong.
Yeah, this
You're
feels
not
so
wrong.
Constraining that, like, I just kind of lost interest. Which is, like, actually kind of, like, I would say that that's a bigger misstep than have been in most of those modern Pokemon games, but...
For sure.
It was a thing that, like, I was trying to piece together myself, like, why I bounced off that game as quickly as I did. Because, like I said, a lot of the other more modern ones I'd played much more of, but...
I loved X and Y.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I really, really dislike Sun and Moon, so...
Yes, I concur. I feels you. I'm in the same wavelength. So
that's
I would even take
silver and gold.
I would even take the water, excessive water in Hoenn over Alola because it was still all connected and
still felt like you were in a real world.
Yeah, as opposed to here's a tiny theme park, here's another one completely removed. Like you couldn't even go between it. Like you had to fly or take a stupid boat and it's just like
fast travel, basically.
Yeah.
And
just
stupid boats.
Damn these boats. Well, good. I'm glad I threw that out there because it feels better for me to have like some level of consensus on that. It took me that like thinking about it to really get it why I wasn't that into those games.
I have a similar problem with Sinnoh in general because like that stupid mountain range divides the entire region, and you need to take a second. If I'm walking anywhere, I have to stop, make sure I've got all the guys with the HMs and stuff. Okay, let's strength, rock smash, flash 50 million other ways to get from one side to the other. Or I could just fly, and it just felt so disconnected and terrible. And, they're doing the exact fucking same thing with these games. And I almost wonder if it's going to get worse, because if they're going to try to, build, quote-unquote, bigger games...
but have these like more separated piecemeal regions, that it's just going to be more of that, and that's not what I want. This is how they lose me. Me, the one who's played over like 1,000 hours of Pokemon over my entire life.
You're not their target audience, Lorraine.
I know, but I'm sad. Damn it, Phil, I'm sad.
Sure, but I mean, like, kind of trying to wrap this all up into like one really pretty bow. That's actually the thing, like, the thing we just described actually probably should be pretty concerning about Sun and Moon, because you're right, the target audience for every Pokemon game is whatever generation of 10-year-olds exists right now. Like, that's
right.
That's who those games are for.
Not the same generation of 10-year-olds that there were 20 years ago.
But if they do, well, you know. But if they do lose that, like, if they lose whatever the special sauce is, and I think part of it is that exploration thing.
Yeah.
Like, if they lose the thing that draws kids into those games, period, like, you know, that's no good for anybody.
Yeah.
But certainly not for the Pokemon company on an ongoing basis of like continuing to build new fans. But
I also think that eventually, if they haven't already hit the number, there's just a point where there will be too many Pokemon.
Like, well, I think that's why they started doing the Alolan forms, because like Dustin and I were looking through, we were doing some random Pokemon, like just general research, and like the past two gens have been like under 100 guys, like new actual Pokemon.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think that's a feature, not a bug. Like,
no. But, I'm just saying, still, like,
eventually that'll be too many.
Yeah.
And say it was, I'll bring up that list from Bulbapedia again.
I mean, if nothing else, like, I think what they probably need to do at this point is, like, as they keep introducing handfuls of new Pokemon, they have to treat Pokemon themselves like the Disney vaults. It's like, all right, you can get your Charmander in this game, but then we're going to put him away for 2 years.
Forever, right.
And then, you know, a couple games from now, he'll be back.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Because technically right now, the gen with the most Pokemon was 5 at 156. Mm. And then 1, 3, 4, 2, 7, and 6 in that descending order.
But yeah, you're absolutely not wrong.
Like, no, I'm pretty sure that's why they did the forms, as opposed to like kind of like scrapping the idea of megas and doing like just type swaps. Like, I would be fine with that. Like, I would do an entire Pokemon game of just type swapped dudes, because that would be extremely interesting.
Yeah, I think any or a combination of all of those things are a good idea. But I do agree that, like, for sure, the thing that they can't just keep doing is like, all right, well, now there's like 2,687 Pokemon, right. So gotta catch them all, kids.
I know very few of Gen 7. Like, I could probably, I know most of 6, but even that's a little foggy.
Same, yeah, and I don't know, probably half of 7.
A lot of them are all very uninteresting, though. Like, I don't know, I'm getting slightly more turned off by some of the designs. Like, I'll have my favorites, as I do in, like, any gen, but very few of them stuck out to me in 7.
I don't even have a problem with any of their particular designs, it's just at this point my memory is basically okay, you know enough Pokemon.
Yeah, not right. As memorable.
How many more can you possibly put on the pile,
not
even if they're
out
amazing?
Against right. Like, the older ones that I've spent more time with, it's just like, there's just too many, right. Like, the buffer is overflowing, and it's bad. I can't empty the cache, man! I can't! You can't shove more data in!
Lots of Pokemon.
Too many.
Too many is perhaps the correct answer.
That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Gen 5, about it.
Yep, I like Gen 5. I agree.
Mm.
Even though I like a lot of Gen 6 Pokemon.
Sure!
I have nothing wrong with the Gen 6 guys, but like, Gen 5, though. Gen 5 was real good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you about Oshawott, though.
Don't.
I love Oshawott.
We'll leave it at that.
I love Oshawott. Totodile's better, but I love Oshawott. Totodile's bae. Don't you say anything.
We'll see who's better when we fight in 3 weeks or whatever.
That's right.
Totodile.
Two Pokemon enter.
Down.
No!
One of them will leave on a stretcher.
No!
The other one will leave later, crowned at the champion.
That's right, yep. Anyway, I think that's going to do it. Thank you guys for getting on and talking about guns and Pokemon and everything in between.
There's a lot in between.
That's true. There's quite a bit. That's going to do it for the Cubicorn Games podcast. Woo! Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks with more chatter, but until then, I'm going to finish some work stuff and shoot some aliens in the face.
Hell yeah. See you online in a minute.
Hell yeah. All right. I'll see you guys later. Bye, Internet.
Bye.
Bye.